Today, the U.S. Supreme Court will begin hearing arguments in Carpenter v. Murphy. It's a case that could dramatically expand the boundaries of the Muscogee Creek Nation in Oklahoma. The case centers around a 1999 murder committed by Patrick Murphy, a Muscogee Creek citizen. The state of Oklahoma sentenced Murphy to death, but Murphy's lawyers challenged the state's jurisdiction, saying that only the federal government had the authority to prosecute crimes that take place on tribal reservations. Now, the nation's highest court will determine whether almost half of the state of Oklahoma is technically reservation land. To help break down the case, I spoke with two people who have been following it closely. Sterling Cosper is a former manager of Muscogee Media, and he's now a freelance Muscogee Creek journalist. And Mary Catherine Nagel is a partner at Pipestem Law, a firm specializing in tribal sovereignty of Native nations and peoples.
The case has been made into many different issues by many different parties with different interests, but ultimately, the question is whether or not courts can judicially disestablish reservations that Congress never has. The Supreme Court precedent on point since a case called Celestine in 1909 has been that once Congress establishes a reservation, only Congress can disestablish that reservation and say it no longer exists.
I want to clarify there. What does it mean to disestablish a nation?
Well, unfortunately, several tribes have had their reservations disestablished. For instance, the Ponca tribe, the Oto Missouria tribe in Oklahoma, Congress passed specific legislation saying the reservation you previously had is now hereby abolished. I think many advocates for tribal sovereignty and for tribal nations and tribal citizens would say that that's, problematic, right? But at the end of the day, that's the legal framework Congress and the Supreme Court have created for the last 100 years or so. And so essentially what Oklahoma is arguing for here is an overturn of more than 100 years of precedent that only Congress can disestablish an Indian reservation once it's been established.
Now, just for another point of clarity here, if it's disestablished, if you will, and then a crime occurs on a reservation, how is it supposed to be prosecuted? Is it then prosecuted as a crime that's happening within the U.S. federal system or state system, or does it still get prosecuted by Native juries and judges?
Well, this is a really great question because one of Oklahoma's main arguments is that if the Supreme Court decides that the reservation has, in fact, not been disestablished, then there's going to be, chaos and all of a huge crisis because all of a sudden thousands or hundreds of thousands of American citizens will be subject to tribal criminal jurisdiction. But if you look at the framework the Supreme Court and Congress have created, who has criminal jurisdiction over a crime committed within the borders of a reservation is incredibly complicated, and it's not made less complicated by saying the reservation has been disestablished. So Oklahoma's point actually, I think, would be served only by saying the reservation hasn't been disestablished. Because if this court were to say it has been disestablished, then any time a crime is committed within the borders of the former, now former reservation, because the court has disestablished it, there'd be questions about the status of the land. Is the land still in allotment? And that is actually incredibly complicated.
Sterling, I want to bring you in here. In this particular case, how do you explain how the Muscogee land is currently categorized by the state of Oklahoma? And why did they think, in this case, they could persecute the case? Has that land been disestablished?
Right now, people have been operating a lot like she was pointing out, allotment. So it's parcels of land that are tribal land. This case would firmly establish, well, are the 11 to 12 counties within our jurisdiction actually wholly our jurisdiction? So my understanding is that that particular crime may have been committed on what people have been assuming for a long time is Oklahoma land rather than one of those allotments, those parcels of land that were part of basically an effort to dissolve the tribal jurisdiction slowly. And that's where I think a lot of this case kind of centers around is how tribal land has been handled in Oklahoma for so long.
And what about the residents of the reservation? What about the Muscogee Nation? Are they, what's the response been there?
Well, a lot of it for us has been just an education process to explain, the very big implications of this case. And also what it really means, the complexities that maybe people that are listening to this interview are starting to figure out, what is tribal land, what is state land. And the other thing is even once this maybe is decided as a reservation, the tribe doesn't have criminal jurisdiction over non-natives except for in instances of sexual and domestic violence because of the Violence Against Women Act. And so this is only going to be a criminal jurisdiction establishment over Native Americans.
Mary Catherine, I want to bring you in here for a second. Something that Sterling just mentioned was prosecuting of non-natives and because of the Violence Against Women Act. What are the implications of the loss of reservation status for Native women specifically? Could you give us some more detail onto that?
Yeah, well, it's huge in part because in 1978, the United States Supreme Court in Oliphant declared tribal nations no longer able to exercise their inherent criminal jurisdiction over non-Indians who come onto tribal lands and commit crimes. But in 2013, when Congress reauthorized the Violence Against Women Act, Congress restored tribal criminal jurisdiction over three categories of crimes, of non-Indian crimes, specifically dating violence, domestic violence, and violation of protection orders. Of course, the catch here is that when Congress restored this portion of tribes' criminal jurisdiction over non-Indians, they limited it to crimes committed, quote, in Indian country. And again, that is the same statute that's at issue here in this case in Murphy, and that's 18 U.S.C. 1152. And an Indian country is defined as three things: a reservation, allotment land, and a dependent Indian community, which, you know, if the Creek Nation no longer has a reservation under 1152, then VAWA, the restored tribal criminal jurisdiction that Muscogee Creek Nation has implemented, only applies if those crimes are committed on allotted land. So that would mean if a Muscogee Creek woman within the borders of her reservation is being physically or sexually abused by her spouse, her non-Indian spouse, or her dating partner, if she calls the tribal police and says, help, he's beating me, or whatever the crime is or whatever the problem is, whether or not the tribal police will have jurisdiction to help her will be dependent upon the status of the land that she's literally standing on at that time. And so for many tribes across the United States, including Creek Nation, but pretty much all tribes that have had allotment, this puts Native women in a very perilous situation. And the only way to avoid that, of course, is to maintain the current status of the Creek Nation Reservation, which is a reservation that's never been disestablished.
Mary Catherine Nagel is a partner at Pipestem Law, a firm specializing in tribal sovereignty of Native nations and peoples, and a citizen of Cherokee Nation. Mary Catherine, thank you.
Thank you.
And Sterling Cosper is a former manager of Muscogee Media, and he's now a freelance Muscogee Creek journalist. Sterling, thanks again.
Well, thank you.